Blog Talk Radio.
On Frat House Sports Network. I'm your host, Sean Blaine. As always, I'm joined by my crew, Pete and Dave. How you guys doing?
Okay.
We have a very packed show tonight. We'll be joined at 7:30 by Dennis Colazzos of Sunday Sports Voice on WNST 1570 to preview the Ravens. Yes, I know, you guys aren't so happy about previewing a non-New York team, but...
I have a bone to pick with you about that.
Wow. Okay.
Can you spare a few minutes?
Good Lord. At 8:20, we'll be joined by Steve Weddix to recap the MLB trade deadline as it came down last Friday afternoon. So we'll get into that at the 8 o'clock hour. But right now, we're going to actually kick off with some UFC.
Oh, yeah.
As Saturday night was UFC 190. Pete, I know you actually saw the entire card.
Yeah.
What was your take from
it? You saw the whole 34-second match?
What was my take from it?
So you wanted to miss it?
They should not have the title match at the very last minute. Oh, I'm sorry. It went 34 seconds, but Ronda Rousey is a complete beast.
Were the introductions longer?
Yes. Yes, it was. That, besides having, like, incredible grappling skills and being able to submit anyone with an armbar, now she can strike and battle and kind of box at the same time. So, I mean, honestly, no one at her weight is even, like, close.
Well, do you think she's good because she's good or she's good because she has no competition?
She's good. But, I mean, she doesn't have any competition. No one can beat her.
That's why she's good.
No one in her weight class can even come close.
Maybe that's why she's good.
No, she's good. She didn't get lucky. She's good.
Well, the thing is, she has that armbar that she does.
Yeah, but she didn't win by an armbar in UFC 190.
No, she didn't.
She won by a knockout, a KO punch.
Yeah.
To Beth Correa.
Well, yeah,
has a really big nose.
There's a picture going
bigger
on Facebook of her leaving the ring, not Ronda Rousey, the other one, Beth Correa. And it looks like she soiled herself.
Okay.
But first
very,
thing that
very,
happened,
very bad comparison, but okay.
No, it's all over Facebook, but the first thing I have, is she the face of UFC?
She the face? I mean...
Female UFC.
Female?
Yeah, but could you name any male UFC guy?
I don't know. I don't pay attention enough.
I don't watch UFC. I have no
idea. I don't watch UFC enough. That's the only time I actually seen any.
I find UFC kind of barbaric.
Is it fake?
No. I don't know.
Ooh. What do you think, Stitches Nation? You could call in, right?
347-826-9964.
To discuss this wonderful topic.
You know, boxing wasn't fake. He just, like, found out it was totally fake.
What is
totally
boxing?
Totally rigged.
Boxing is fake?
It was rigged. Yeah, sure was. I don't know if it's now, but it was.
What was rigged about it?
People would bet on the fights and stage them, and people would take dives and stuff.
They actually were saying, I was reading one stat, they said the last five Ronda Rousey fights have gone a total of 160 seconds.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know.
Was the last one like 14 seconds?
Yes. And people laugh. There's comments all over Facebook and all over social media that the fact that why would somebody pay for that card when you could have just got the entire clip on YouTube?
I know. I'm kind of regretting it.
Yeah.
You didn't pay.
Yeah, I did. Like $10.
Oh, I'll wait till you come back up here and tell you a story about that. But overall, though, I mean, she's very dominant. As I was saying to somebody, she is what Brock Lesnar used to be in UFC.
It's still female. I still question if it's like there's no competition. I don't know.
could it also be, well, that may have something to do with it, that there is no competition. But again, when Tyson was in his prime, there wasn't really competition for him, was there?
Who? Wasn't Muhammad Ali there?
No. When Tyson was a boxer.
Mike Tyson, what about?
There wasn't competition for him.
There's not too much competition for anybody in boxing, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm putting it over here,
So then, UFC president Dana White, either.
That's the ball guy?
Yeah. Came out after, in the post-match conference thing, and made some interesting comments about WWE.
What did he say about WWE?
He said it's completely fake.
That's really a controversial comment.
No, here's where he says that. He pretty much says that because his mentality was, you have to look at his mentality, which is kind of funny, though, the fact that he would even say this, being that he's very good, he's one of his good friends is Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he would even come out and say that, well, wrestling is fake.
I'm sorry to break it to you, but it kind of is.
Well,
I'm sorry, all the young listeners out there.
Seth Rollins, who is the current WWE World Heavyweight Champion, came out and kind of fired back at Dana White.
What's he firing back? He knows it's fake.
No, but the thing is, he trains like an athlete.
He does train like an athlete, but the sport itself is fake. They can't call it sports. They call it sports entertainment for a reason.
And it's funny.
They train like athletes. They are athletes, but it's still staged.
Yeah, but the thing is, I was listening to an interview from Daniel Bryan. He's on a book tour right now to promote his new book.
Yes.
And one of the comments he said...
Is that their book?
He said was, he doesn't see himself as an entertainer. He sees himself as a wrestler.
Well, now he's retired. He knows anything.
John, I understand he doesn't see himself as an entertainer. Well, he doesn't see himself as an entertainer, but he sees himself as a wrestler. No matter what they think, it's fake. The sport is fake, and the wrestlers know it's fake because the entire match is staged. It's choreographed. It's all scripted. They already know who wins. Why do you think every time they get a belt, how do they know who's going to win? They already have the names on the belt.
No, they don't. They change it afterwards.
They don't.
Yes, they do.
They do not.
Yes, they do.
Why do matches always end on time?
Perfectly.
If you watch Monday Night Raw, it starts at what, 9 o'clock or
8 o'clock?
8 o'clock. It goes till 5 after 11?
Yeah.
At 5 after 11, it ends. The match ends. Why? Why can't the match go another 20 minutes?
No, well, the thing is with Raw usually goes, it's supposed to end 11:05. But for the last couple of weeks, it's been ending like by 11:15, 11:20.
But it's supposed to be live. Every match ends the same time.
SmackDown.
Every match is basically the same length also.
Yeah, but the thing is also SmackDown. No, that you're actually...
But why?
Years ago, they used to give you the line. Don't do anymore. Years ago, they used to give you the line.
Yeah, but why do they... Like, for example, like 8 o'clock comes around, right? They have the first few matches. They're all like 10 minutes. But they give an hour and a half for them. Why at like... 10:40, they have the main event, and they have two matches and the main event.
Because the main event's supposed to be the big attraction.
I understand it's supposed to be a big attraction. I understand it's supposed to be last, but why do they don't give enough time for it? They give an hour and a half for 10-minute matches, three. They give an hour and a half for, but when it comes to 10:30, they have like two or three matches in 30 minutes, and one of them's the main event.
And if you look at the end of Monday Night, any Raw match or anything, when the time comes to end, it ends like a movie. It doesn't end like, say 11:10 comes around, the match is over. They're not like mid-move. It ends. Like they're all watching the clock.
Yeah. Well, the thing is...
Well, then how real could it be, possibly?
But the thing that I'm trying to get at is, I get the fact that it's scripted. I get that. But the way Dana... When I was reading the comments about it, and Dana White basically said, well, the whole thing is fake.
It is.
But not, they train like athletes, they get injured like athletes.
They do, but it's still a fake. John, it's fake for the simple reason that they call it sports entertainment. If WWE was sports,
call it sports.
But it's sports entertainment. The point of WWE is a business. It's supposed to make money. It's supposed supposed to bring in money. They don't want to see you punching for 30 minutes in a row. They don't want to see you kicking for 30 minutes in a row. They want to see the big high flying off the top rope. They want to see the five knuckle shuffle and the you can't see me. It's a show. It's not a sport. You're welcome.
But you...
Not only is it a show, but also it's also there to sell merchandise, selling dolls and the posters. And the conventions and everything else. That's where they make their money.
Yeah, but wasn't it, if I'm wrong, years ago, in the days of Hogan and Piper and those guys, wasn't it considered sports?
Entertainment. It was always sports entertainment.
It was always fake. Everything was fake.
Yeah, but they never...
From the 80s, from the 70s, 80s, it was always sports entertainment.
But they never...
It hasn't been around since the 50s.
But they never paraded around, though, in the beginning that they were sports entertainment.
Yeah, because back then it wasn't all about the money.
It also wasn't Vince McMahon.
And it wasn't Vince McMahon, too. Vince McMahon is all, they're all about the money. They want to make the money. They want to sell the posters. They want to sell the foam fingers. They want to sell all the merchandise. They want those kids in the front row to get all the hats and all the stuff. And they, you know, did you know that they don't come with their own posters?
Yeah, they...
They give them posters? Come on!
Yeah.
They don't get hats. They give them hats. They give them all that stuff. They give them costumes. They don't... They're there to make the money.
Here's the villain of the house. The fans in the stands never had posters and anything, nothing like that.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, basically, that
that's Tony John Cena anymore.
But actually, sticking with the wrestling thing for a couple more minutes.
Yes.
Another, I guess you could say, legend. Passed away last week.
Yeah.
Size Roddy Piper?
No, that was.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks for stealing my thunder.
Roddy, you don't think anybody in the world knows that?
Again, this is the first time we've been on air since it all happened.
You know what we should have? A wrestling death watch.
Yeah.
We should have a wrestling death watch. Who's going to die next?
Well,
my prediction? Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, you heard that he got
stomach cancer.
Yeah, he's probably going to be the next one.
Well,
so,
prayers
go out to the family and friends of Roddy Piper. Sorry for your loss. Did you hear that Ronda Rousey actually, like, took after him?
Yeah,
he started with Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Well, he used to have a podcast, actually. He used to, but...
How many listeners did he have?
A peanut. And the thing is...
Don't worry, we have a lot.
He ended up having it one time that she actually came to do an interview with him, and she didn't have an entourage.
Who?
Rousey.
Why would she have an entourage?
Because of the fact...
She doesn't need an entourage. She could beat anyone up any day.
And probably break half their arms.
Back then, she didn't need an entourage. She wasn't anything.
She's been big for a couple of years.
John,
not that many years.
Right now, honestly, if she had an entourage, she would need, like, 7 feet... 400-pound people to actually even come close to protecting her. And even then, I don't think they would do anything.
But, Dad,
she doesn't need any protection. She has plenty.
But you actually watched wrestling when Piper was in his heyday.
You say Dad.
Dave.
I'm not Dad. Dave.
Stitches Nation!
Peter.
When I say Stitches, you say Nation Stitches?
Nation.
Stitches?
Nation.
Nation.
What do you take from Piper?
What?
Let me rephrase.
Wait, is it jobless again?
Projected?
Let me rephrase.
Yeah, please do. Try language that I understand.
How was he as a wrestler? Let's go that route.
He was a character. Wasn't a great wrestler.
You don't need to be a good...
He had a great gimmick.
Yes, exactly.
You saw that documentary.
Yeah.
And truthfully, they had all the gimmicks.
Okay, Mike, I've seen it on the network a couple of times. What was his gimmick?
That he was Scottish and wore a kilt.
Wore a kilt?
He was a good wrestler.
Only thing I remember, he was better as a heel.
Much better.
Than he was as a babyface.
He was like the Big Show. Back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah. But pretty much.
None of them are good. Hogan? Hulk Hogan, the worst wrestler imaginable. Andre the Giant, the worst wrestler
Well, you can't mention Hogan and WWE together.
But,
the
thing
worst.
Was... Hulk Hogan had a good gimmick.
Wow, is that a big enough shape?
Was that a dumbass?
And Andre the Giant was just 7 feet, 8 inches tall. He was a monster.
You think the Big Show's a good wrestler? It's terrible.
Don't even get me started on the Big Show. I have a lot of issues with him.
Ooh, double down the line. Let's go.
the rest of it's terrible.
Let's go.
What works is the gimmick. That's what works.
Yeah, well, but he's also known for WrestleMania 1, the main event with Hogan and...
Because he's the face of wrestling. If you're the face of Stitches Monday night. He's the face of wrestling. He has been Hogan.
No, not Hogan.
Now Hogan's the face of wrestling.
When I say Stitches, you say
so,
Nation.
So then Piper would be, I guess, second tier?
Way down second tier.
If you had to put... if you had to put, you know how we do it with like quarterbacks in the NFL, where
no.
you let me, can you let me get to the point I'm trying to get at?
Oh.
Where you have like Brady and Manning are like your top tier, then you have like Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, Matt Ryan.
You think Matt Ryan is up there? Or just hypothetical?
This is hypothetical.
Oh, okay.
Is your second tier.
Pathetic.
And then your third tier would be like Geno Smith. Ryan Tannehill.
Geno Smith is on a tier?
Ryan Tannehill?
It's going to be underneath the tiers.
What tier, so to speak, would Piper be?
Second.
I don't know. Wait, let's go back to a more real... You think Geno Smith is on a tier?
Oh.
Geno Smith and Ryan Tannehill? Second, third tier quarterbacks. Are you out of your mind?
Wait.
Our dog could do better than Geno Smith.
I get Geno Smith, but you're actually defending Tannehill?
No, I think he's worse than third tier.
Okay. Next week on this show, I'm saying this right now, we're going to...
Hulk Hogan again?
No. We're going to go with what you're going... I see what you're going with. And since actually Sunday is the first NFL game, it's the Hall of Fame game.
Oh, great. What are we doing?
So we're going to have... You're going to come up with your own...
Oh, and Hallmark. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter.
Your top three tier quarterbacks.
Of all time?
Oh, yeah. Mike, if you want to come on to defend Tannehill, you can.
Of all time?
Yeah.
But the best quarterbacks now or of all time?
No, of right now.
Of right now.
How many are in each tier?
Next week.
How many are in each tier?
How many? It depends on how many you want.
Three in each tier.
If you have a...
All right. We're actually going to...
Have you ever been a quarterback? Are your tears of sadness?
Yay. All right. I'm not even going to answer that with a response. I'm actually liking this now because now we're actually going to get into some NFL.
Oh.
As the whole thing game is a Sunday.
What?
The whole thing game.
Oh, another waste of 3 hours?
Yeah.
That's not like an all-star game, but who plays in that game? Anybody?
I don't know who's playing.
But which nobody plays in
that game.
No,
that's the first preseason game.
So nobody plays because they don't want to get injured.
Probably. But the thing is, so we actually do have some NFL stuff to get into now. Oh, it's Steelers-Vikings.
What's Steelers-Vikings?
It's the whole theme game.
Is it played in Canton, Ohio?
Yeah.
Wait, so it's Steelers players, like old-time players?
No, it's the Steelers now.
Oh, so it's not like Terry Bradshaw playing against, like...
Frank Parkinson?
Yeah.
No. They could just touch each other, and they'll probably break a hip. What?
Nothing.
So, I want to get to the Sheldon Richardson situation.
Who? Sheldon?
Yeah, he is...
Sheldon.
I'm sorry, this is a guy who was suspended for 4 games as it is for... Pot usage.
Marijuana.
Same thing.
John.
Pot is slang.
Marijuana. You want to go slang or cigarettes? Wait, well, are we in Colorado right now?
He now got into more trouble.
Correct.
He was caught, he was resisting arrest because he was caught speeding at 140 miles per hour.
What kind of car do you
have?
Bentley. He had the car that he was in smelled like marijuana.
Marijuana.
And he also had a 12-year-old kid in the car. And he had a gun.
The 12-year-old kid had a gun?
No. Richardson.
Richardson had a gun and marijuana?
And the 12-year-old kid in the car.
The 12-year-old kid had marijuana?
Who smoked the 12-year-old kid?
Oh, my God. Let me read. In the car,
right,
a loaded handgun.
You have the right to bear arms according to the Second Amendment of the Constitution?
It was also registered, by the way.
So?
To who?
To Sheldon Richardson.
So you have the right to bear arms?
He had a 12-year-old kid in the car.
Was he a Cossie?
He also
was it
drive
California?
In 100. It was in the, I think, Missouri.
Missouri.
So maybe they'll let him go to Missouri.
The question I bring up: do you think he plays at all this year?
Why not? What are they? Well,
yes,
what?
Because they can't do anything. They don't do anything about domestic violence. Remember, Adrian Peterson. Who's
it? Wasn't hitting the kid.
Who's
he was driving with the kid.
Who's it?
Ray Rice.
Ray Rice.
Yeah, they, if the fact they have domestic violence and Adrian Peterson hit a kid with a tree branch, they can't really do anything to Sheldon Richardson. He wasn't injuring the kid. He was in the car. And sure, the kid's in a Rolls Royce that weighs about 6,000 pounds, but nothing would happen there.
That was endangered, child endangerment.
No. But you don't, so that you don't bring him up on the stuff with the fact that he had the marijuana in the car and he was driving 140 miles per hour.
Drug possession and speeding.
Did it smell marijuana or he had a marijuana?
It smelled the marijuana, this is according to the report I read. But he was also already suspended for 4 games for marijuana charges.
Did he have marijuana?
Did he have marijuana on him or just smell?
Yeah, he had it on him and it smelled.
So it was possession. How much did he have?
I don't know. They didn't say the amount.
Well, anything more than like a quarter of a gram, right, is punishable.
Yeah, anything more than one joint is a felony. You gotta get the facts there, John.
It's still waiting.
Wait. The story about the history show.
But the question I have is, does he play? Does he play a down at all for the New York Jets this year?
Why not? Does he play what?
Does he play a down?
Why not? Seriously.
Well, he's already suspended for 4 games as it is.
Fine, so game
five. So the earliest he would have come back is till the same time Tom Brady coming back.
Huh?
What are you looking at? Yeah, that's how much time we have left.
Can we go from 9?
Yeah.
Hour and 7 minutes and nine, is 9 o'clock?
Yes.
An hour and 7 minutes?
Peter?
No. An hour and 7 minutes is 8:30.
See?
Uh-oh. Oh, we're going to cut short at 8:30?
Oh.
It's a counting down from an hour and 30 minutes.
Thank
what
you,
I told you.
Thank you for bringing that up. I didn't even notice that.
What are you, how many times have I pointed at it?
Because I didn't know what you were looking at.
We're going up to 8:30?
Yeah. Nice play.
Ooh, nice
really?
Play. Yes, and I don't know what we're going to do now because we have a guest coming on at 8:20.
He'll be on really quick.
What did I tell you?
I didn't even notice it because I'm always used to it.
John, what do you mean? Well, I was pointing at it. It said 1 hour, 30 minutes.
Read the motive.
And it's
not
going to be showing at
8:30. There's issues.
This is the issues?
No, there's been other issues.
There's still. Call the guest who's supposed to be on 8:20 so you can come on 8:20.
Well, let's see what happens because they had issues all of last week on the other fine program. And
who's your guest? Not John Lee, is it?
All.
Everyone's yelling?
Yeah, we're all yelling.
Oh, we're not.
Who's yelling? I'm yelling.
Oh, I don't know if the folk can hear me.
pretty much, it's a one-star. I'll explain that.
But it doesn't matter.
Wait, Kelly Johnson.
They'll have a packed show for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, pretty much.
Very much a real sport, wrestling.
So, pretty much, all right. This is a question I came up with. New York football right now has two of the dumber, I don't know if you can say, the dumber defensive linemen. Yeah, that's the way I want to put it. Sheldon Richardson and Jason Pierre-Paul. The question I throw to both of you.
Who's comment about that?
Who's dumber?
Jason
Pierre-Paul.
Who's dumber?
Dumber.
Jason
Pierre-Paul for blowing off most of his hand, or Sheldon Richardson for getting to the
trouble. Jason Pierre-Paul because he had a $60 million contract waiting.
Yeah. If he would have signed that contract before he did the firecrackers, he would have been a genius. But the fact that he did it after makes him a dummy. Is Sheldon Richardson going to spend 4 games getting paid for those 4 games?
No.
How much did he lose it?
A lot. I don't know the exact amount.
That's only a 9, I'll be honest. I get up in the morning. Yeah.
But the thing that you have to look at, though, is who knows, first of all, if Jason Pierre-Paul will even play at down this year.
Hey, man,
who knows how...
What does play at down?
There's downs in football.
Not at down, a down.
A down, that's what I've been saying.
No, you said at down.
You said at down.
A down.
It was like stubborn. Okay.
So we have that. And then I actually want to get to, since we actually have a few minutes before our first guest joins us this evening, I want to get to the appeal that came down for the Flake.
Oh, what?
His suspension got upheld. It's 4 games.
Okay, so it was upheld.
He wants to fight it more.
Again, he's fighting it?
Yeah.
Who's he going to fight it with now? God?
No, he wants to get somebody from the appeals court, even though there's been people who've been all over the airwaves who have been saying that his likelihood... He basically wants to get an injunction.
What?
He basically wants it to be put in that by the time the opening day is, which is September 10th, he's on that field for New England.
But the appeal got upheld. Why is he doing it? Why?
Because he still thinks he did nothing wrong.
Why can't he just accept it? Even the team's accepted it.
Well, here's
Robert Kraft has accepted it.
Yeah, but here's where it gets interesting now.
Because you know what somebody said? Deal with it and move on. You know what somebody said a while ago? I was watching one of those dumb shows on ESPN.
Okay.
And some guy had a great comment about it. He said, if Tom Brady, when it first happened, would have turned around and said, I didn't know they were deflated.
Mm-hmm.
I like playing with, and it's known that he likes playing with underinflated balls. If he would have come the first time it happened and said, I know they're not, I know they're underinflated, I don't know who did it, I made a mistake, I'll take responsibility for it, and let's go on. If someone made a comment, the whole thing would have been done.
Yeah, I agree with you
100%. There wouldn't have been a penalty, there may have been a penalty, but there wouldn't have been anything else. What is the big deal? You admit it, this is what it is. It's not like if you spend it 4 days without pay, you're going to die of, like, poverty. He's not going on the welfare line. So what is the big deal? I think it's ridiculous. You know what it is? He's trying to make a stand for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, I actually said this on Dennis' show, which you can hear every Sunday morning, that it's going to end up causing a civil war at the NFL.
Between North and South?
Let me finish, because the problem's going to be if something else happens, and let's be honest, something else is bound to happen eventually in the NFL. I mean, this past season we had Ray Rice, you had Jonathan Dwyer, you had Adrian Peterson. Jonathan Dwyer was the running back for the Arizona Cardinals.
How'd you know I said it? I didn't
say
it
either. Greg Hardy,
what did he do?
I don't remember what he did.
Maybe he didn't do anything.
You had five major cases that could have caused major black eyes for the NFL.
Black guys?
Black eyes.
Oh, boy.
Well,
are you
black guys?
But what I'm trying to get at is he's trying to use this that if something else happens, the owners are going to turn around and go, well, look, Roger, you gave Brady this for this. Well, why don't you give... let's say Joe Schmo does something.
Well, is there a stat that they were written? It can't be written because nobody had ever deflated footballs before.
No, actually, there was reports coming out that Brady and Peyton Manning both lobbied the NFL to have balls underdeflated, I think from 06.
They said Brady likes that. I don't know about Peyton Manning. I don't know.
Because it gives them better control of the football.
Yeah.
It doesn't fly as far, though.
But what I just don't understand,
I
just don't get, though, this is why is he trying to bring this further?
So at this point, for the good of the NFL, the good of the Patriots, I would accept the suspension and leave it alone and go on.
He's trying to make a big fuss about it. He's trying to put his
face in his mouth. The problem is, by appealing, he's going to bring more suspicion and more guilt upon himself, and the public's going to like him less and less. Let's face it. If you don't like the Patriots or Tom Brady, there's no way. If you don't like the Patriots, you don't like Tom Brady. And most people do not like the Patriots.
But here's
a lot of the reason they don't like the Patriots is because of Tom Brady.
But here's the funniest thing, though.
Pretty boring.
What's funny about the whole thing is the fact is that Tom Brady wants to fight this thing. And I've already said for the longest, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
To just let it go already. Because when this whole thing started off in the beginning, I was thinking, okay, maybe Brady does have a point here, that maybe it wasn't him who orchestrated this whole thing. But all of a sudden, when reports were coming out that he smashed his cell phone, and did you hear that one? As he said in his response, which he posted on Facebook, and I quote, he smashed his phone because he had an old Samsung and he wanted an iPhone 6.
I remember that.
So he had insurance coverage? That's fraud.
And he says, and he also said something like, I do this every time I get a new phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he wants to destroy any of this thing on the contact.
But I'm sorry. You're going to destroy the phone right after you brought up for an investigation in which you're telling the ball boys to deflate the footballs?
A little too coincidental.
I'm sorry. Something to me just doesn't seem right with
it's
that.
It's a little too coincidental.
But what I just don't...
A little fishy.
But what I just don't understand, though, is... Yeah, if you guys have proven that the NFL didn't have... Because there was reports coming out, I would say probably by like Thursday or Friday, that the NFL actually got the wrong information. Does the NFL turn around and go, oh, yeah, we made a mistake, and we'll let you... We're not going to have you serve any of the sentence.
The NFL didn't make a mistake.
Won't happen. They upheld it. End of conversation. Go on with your life, and that's the NFL. That's all I feel.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you can.
So, now, since we're on this, how do you think the Patriots are going to do this season?
I think the first four games, I think they're going 2-2.
2-2?
Yeah.
They're going 1-3.
Realistically, I think we went over this a couple weeks ago. Their first game is Pittsburgh. They have... I don't remember who else they have. And let me pull up their schedule. It was... Okay. So the thing was, we're actually going to be joined by Steve Lennox at 7:50, not 8:20.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so we're going to sign something? When
was
the first one coming
on? He's supposed to be on, but...
Jim Leiters?
No. Okay. But we're actually getting now into some baseball.
Wait.
Why? Keep talking. Well, no, because the issue is because we're on such a time thing. I'd rather get right into baseball.
Okay. No.
So the trade the trade deadline happened.
I have to do one last question on football.
What?
Is Tom Brady married to Marshall Brady?
No.
Is he really?
No.
Yeah, for the Brady Bunch.
He's married to
brunch.
But wait. No, but seriously, how do you think Tom Brady is going to do in the division? Like, do you think he's going to... Do you think that he's going to come back and they're going to go, like, 12-0?
Realistically, even when he comes back, I still think they'll win that division.
You still think so?
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to finish as? 10-6 or 11-5?
I think if you could win... Because you got to understand.
The Jets aren't winning, though.
The Jets aren't going to win that division, first of all. Miami and Buffalo, I think, are your two teams you have to look at as far as teams that could give New England a run for their money.
Yeah.
But realistically, I don't think, and that's a home run. The New York Mets have now taken a 3-0 lead over Miami.
On a home run by Michael Conforto.
Hey, Mets are playing. No, he was up before. But, yeah, realistically, I think Miami and Buffalo, I think, are your two teams you have to look at.
Yes.
I don't think the Jets are going to do it just because of the fact it's the first year under the Todd Boyles.
Todd Bowles.
Or whatever.
Not Bowles, Bowles.
And McCagnett era. And I still think you need a year for that whole... Because, I mean, you look at what the Giants were last year. They were under the Ben McAdoo system. It took them till the last 6 weeks of the season to start picking it up.
And,
at this point... Yeah,
go ahead, I forgot
what I was going to say.
But, if that's the case, then if you don't think the Jets are going to do well, then?
No, I don't think. I think, if anything, the Jets go at the most. What were they last year? They were 4-12 last year?
4-12? Yeah, I think so.
I think the
6-10?
6-10 or 8-8.
You think 8-8? You really
think
so?
Maybe. It really depends on how they do. It also depends on how much it hurts. I mean, unlike with Buffalo, yeah, you have a lot of question marks with Buffalo and Miami.
Yeah.
But the biggest question marks I have with the Jets so far, we kind of went over this last week, but I'll touch upon it a little bit more, is you have Leonard Williams coming in, who was a steal of the draft.
Yeah.
You don't know how he's going to do. He may end up coming in and flopping.
Well, not exactly. But.
You also don't know how the tandem of Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker are going to do this year.
Did they get someone else?
No.
They got Brandon Marshall? I know that, but...
And that was it. That's where the receivers go.
Really?
And then they got this other kid. I forgot where the guy was, Kevin Smith.
Oh.
But he ended up, I think, breaking some ribs on a catch he made during one of the practices that he's going to be at 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. So, you think the Patriots are going to do but they're going to win the division?
So
they make the playoffs then, right?
I think they'll be one of those teams that makes the playoffs but has under 10 wins.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think they're going to be like a Seattle Seahawks a few years ago when they went 7-9?
No, I don't think they'd be that bad, but I think you can see the Patriots, because of the fact that Brady is out the first four games.
Yeah.
I can see them going 10-6. Actually, no. If I have them going 2-2 in the first four games,
yeah,
what would that put them as a record then?
2-2 in the first four games.
No, as far as for the rest of the season.
What's he going
to do? Well, no, it'll be 8-8.
I would have them going 8-8 probably.
And you still think they'll win division?
I think a lot of it's going to depend really on how Miami does.
And Geno Smith.
How Buffalo does and how the Jets do.
We know the other question is, if Patriots don't win the division,
who else?
Do you blame his suspension or they just had a lousy year?
True. Yeah, but it's funny though, you can't really say that. Because what year was it that Brady got injured?
2011.
No, wasn't it earlier than 2011?
2008.
When he got tackled in the Kansas City game.
And he tore his ACL.
Castle.
Castle, and they won 11-5
and
lost.
And didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, I hope the Jets...
I think the Jets won the division that year.
Yeah. That was insane.
But I'm saying...
So what do you do? Wait, excuse me. Didn't the Patriots also go a perfect season whilst the Giants in the Super Bowl?
Yes.
So it was,
You know what the thing is? No matter what you do...
You can't predict.
It's unfortunate, but... It's not the same thing as, like, steroids in baseball. But, unfortunately, do you think the Hall of Fame career of Tom Brady is tarnished again? I mean, he had nothing to do with Spygate, but do you think that Deflategate...
I think it makes a difference.
You don't think so?
Yeah. He's still... Football fans have a very short memory. Very short memory.
Yeah, all right. So, since we discussed... We mentioned the Seattle Seahawks before. Do you think that the Russell Wilson's contract is absolutely ridiculous?
Yes.
It's
4 years, $87 million.
Don't get me wrong.
$31 million guaranteed.
I think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league.
It's not the
given
best.
That much.
It's not the best.
But I think a lot of his success is who's around him. And, yes, I understand
true.
The fact that a good quarterback is somebody who has to have good players. But let's be honest. Graham was on that team. Graham's on the team now. You had Marshawn Lynch on the team. You had all these guys on this team who I think were the only reasons why.
Where's Marshawn Lynch now?
He's still there. I'm just saying. I forgot who their tight end was last year. But I think a lot of...
Doug Baldwin?
No, he was a wide receiver.
He was also a tight end. He got traded?
He's with Detroit now? No, that's Golden Tate. Golden Tate.
Oh, Golden Tate was a tight end.
No, Golden Tate was a wide receiver.
Oh, God. Who was that guy? Miller? No.
Zach Miller?
No.
I don't remember, but...
Oh, no. Zach Miller's the Steelers.
I think there's another Zach Miller. But the one thing... but now...
I don't know. Whatever.
But we're going to transition now from football now and get into some baseball.
Okay.
No. Do you have anything else you want to get at?
I just think that I don't think that the Patriots are going to do as well as you think. You said like 10-6?
I said 10-6 or 8-8. And right now we're actually being joined by Dennis Colatzos. He's the host of Sunday Sports Voice on WNST. We're going to bring him on right now. Dennis, how are you doing this evening?
I'm well. How about yourself, John?
Doing very well. First thing I want to get at is the news that came out today of safety Matt Elam. He tore his biceps, and he'll be out for the year. How much of an impact does that have on the Ravens' secondary?
I don't think it has a huge impact on it, John. He's been a huge disappointment. A bit of a bust. The only reason he's on the team is because he's on the last year of his contract. So he was only going to cost the Ravens about $400,000 this year anyway, which is pretty cheap for a ball player, a former number one draft pick. And I think he was slated to be a backup safety, plus play maybe some special teams as a gunner. So it's not a huge loss for the Ravens, given the fact that, again, this would have been his last year. And if that's the only injury that the Ravens come away with through training camp, it would have been a successful training camp. But to me, I feel bad for him as a person, but as a player, it's not that big of a loss.
Well, looking at that secondary in itself, you have Jimmy Smith coming back, and all I know is, how is that? But how's that secondary going to do, being that Jimmy Smith is coming back after his injury, and now you have this injury with Matt Elam?
Yeah, Jimmy Smith is a shutdown corner, and you know the whole season is predicated upon the secondary's health. To your point, which is a great point. Jimmy Smith, as long as he can stay on the field, they can roll coverage to the other side to help out Ladarius Webb or Rashawn Melvin or whomever's out there, Asa Jackson. They do have some depth, but Jimmy Smith is a big key. They were really one defensive back away last year from making a deeper run into the playoffs, perhaps even to the Super Bowl. But Jimmy Smith, and he is healthy by all accounts, does change the equation for the Ravens. But the Ravens think they're deeper than you know, most of us fans and media think they are. They like what they have on the field right now. And, again, provided that those guys can stay healthy, they feel they can make a run. The front seven is very strong, so they can stop the run. They can put pressure on the quarterback, which means that the secondary doesn't have to be as sticky as in years past.
Dennis, David, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Question, how do you tear your biceps?
I'm sorry? How do you tear your biceps? Yeah, you know what? I've been at training camp before. I saw Leon Searcy back in 2000 tear his triceps. It's a common injury for ball players. A lot of times it's induced by steroids. I'm not saying that Matt Elam was on steroids, but although your biceps get bigger, your tendons are only that you can't strengthen the tendons and the ligaments. They are what they are. It's what you're born with. You know, it's original factory equipment, if you will. But a lot of times, that's what happens to these guys. Although the muscles get bigger, the tendons are not, and that results in tears. So it's not an uncommon football injury. You see it happen periodically, to certain teams.
So these guys will work out, build huge biceps, but have no idea that basically the tendons are rubber bands and they don't get any bigger?
Yeah, but pretty much so. What happens is, too, when you're – I think most players in the NFL, they're taking human growth hormone. It's still an undetected substance. And so what happens is the muscles get bigger, but their tendons, I mean, they are what they are. And so when you see these tears, these injuries, the pectoral tears, if you would, the triceps, the biceps, all those upper body injuries, a lot of that is a byproduct of the human growth hormone.
Are steroids an issue in football like baseball or not?
Yeah, they are. I mean, and the problem is, same thing with baseball. When the guys are juiced up, like especially back in the day when you had Roger Clemens throwing 100 miles an hour at your head, your bat speed had to increase. Same thing with the NFL. If the player opposite of you is taking steroids, you have to take steroids in order to survive, particularly if you're a lineman, if you're a defensive end, defensive tackle, guard, tackle, center. So I think all these guys are – that's the dirty secret in the NFL. Unfortunately, is they're all juicing. You look at these guys, myself, following the Ravens for as long as I have, Ray Rice, Jamal Lewis, these guys are just freaks, and they're just super big. Matt Burke, I don't know if you guys have seen the former center of the Ravens, how much weight he's lost. Matt Burke's down to 235 pounds since he retired. I mean, he lost 100 pounds of mass because he's not as swollen as he used to be on his 6'3" frame. I mean, now he looks like a normal guy. Before, he was a beast, and that's what happens when the smart players get out of the NFL. They decompress. They stop taking what they were taking to be as large and as huge to be able to withstand a 16, 18, 20-game season plus training camp.
If this bicep thing is one of the causes of it is steroid use, could he be brought up on steroid charges?
Well, I don't think they're going to. You know, they're not going to test them after the fact. And keep in mind that the NFL, when they come to test you, you get a warning, which is a shame because they still fail. A guy like Sheldon Richardson, he could have avoided his 4-game suspension. They know when the NFL is coming to test. It's not a secret. They're not random. I mean, they call them random tests, but it's not random when you know the date they're coming to test you. So it does allow you to stop taking them, to take masking agents. And the masking agents are always one step ahead of the product, the test, rather. So it's not unusual for these type of things to happen. So they're not going to go back after the fact and test them. They get tested, but, again, they know when it's coming, which, again, no player in the NFL should ever be suspended for PEDs because they know when that test is coming.
Hey, Dennis, how are you doing? This is Peter.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Good, thanks. Regarding the steroids in the NFL, isn't the standards of the steroids higher? Don't they require more steroids because, for instance, like baseball, for example, don't they need more steroids in football because the players are bigger naturally to play the sport?
I mean, a steroid is a steroid, but again, they have state-of-the-art mask and agents, and again, keep in mind the primary thing that the NFL players take is human growth hormone, and there is no test at this time that they administer that's able to detect it. And a human growth hormone, it makes you bigger, and it makes your recovery time faster. It allows you to lift more weights, and subsequently, you do get bigger and stronger as a player to be able to withstand the rigors of the season. And again, everybody's taking it, so you have to take it to be able to survive. I mean, you have to live up to your contract. You have to get on the field. If you can't get on the field, you'll get cut. So the pressure is on these guys to stay healthy, and these type of agents do help them. And whatever state-of-the-art the item they can put in their body to keep them on the field, that's what they'll use.
Dennis, I want to get now more to the Ravens in itself. How do you think offensive coordinator Mark Trestman is going to do this year?
You know, I've read a mixed bag of things about Trestman. I've talked to people over in Chicago. They disliked him greatly as a head coach. As an offensive coordinator, he seems to be pass happy. I think John Harbaugh is going to slow him down. The Ravens have always been a run-first team. The AFC North dictates that you run the ball first, pass second. If you don't establish the run, it's going to be a long day. If you allow your offense to become one-dimensional, it's going to be a long day. So I'm curious to see how Trestman's going to be able to adapt under Harbaugh's guidance. He does have some toys. He's got three young tight ends. He's got some wide receivers. He's got some running backs. He has the offensive line coming back intact. He's using the same zone blocking scheme that Gary Kubiak used. So as long as he follows the Kubiak script, he's got the same players. He's got Justin Forsett back there, who has tremendous vision for running back, low mileage for a 30-year running back. And as long as Trestman can stay within the scheme, he'll be fine. The other good thing about Trestman, like so far, he seems to have developed a very good rapport with Joe Flacco. If Joe Flacco is happy with his quarterback, with his offensive coordinator, that bodes well for the offense. Joe has had not a very good relationship with Cam Cameron in the past. I think that affected his performance. But recently with Gary Kubiak and now with Mark Trestman, it seems like he has some chemistry, which I think is the key. I think it's a very underrated thing when you look at the NFL. The relationship between the quarterback and the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach. If they're all on the same page, if they're all in agreement, if they're seeing the same things, I think it bodes well for the offense. When you have the dissension there, it's not a good thing. And Trestman seems to be a nice guy, a get-along guy. He's very passionate, but he's an upbeat, positive person. So the early returns on Trestman so far have been very good.
Yeah. How do you think Forsett's going to do after the year he had last year, being that it is in the Trestman system and not in the Kubiak system?
Yeah, I think it's going to do very well. Juan Castillo is still the offensive line coach. They have the same zone blocking scheme they had last year. Nothing has changed. And Forsett, although he signed a 3-year, $9 million contract, remains a very humble person. He's definitely a leader. He's having an impact on a younger player. I expect an even bigger season. A lot of people don't. I expect him to catch more passes out of the backfield. That's a Trestman hallmark, if you will. But he's remained very, very humble. He's in great, phenomenal shape. He's not a big back. And as long as he doesn't get dinged up early, I think he's in for a big season. The guys who play fantasy football out there, I think he's definitely an X factor, as someone I would definitely stash on my roster in the middle of the rounds.
Yeah, I want to look at another guy, though, on the offensive side, Dennis Pitta. And last year he had the ACL injury. How do you think he'll do coming back this year?
I don't think Dennis Pitta will ever play again. Dennis Pitta's hip has popped out of his socket twice. To me, he has a genetically shallow hip socket. Think about it, guys. How hard do you think it is to pull the entire hip out of its socket? I mean, that sucker's way in there. And for him to have suffered two injuries in that area that were non-contact, he never got hit. If I'm Dennis Pitta, I retire. I think the Ravens are encouraging him to retire. He has a lot of money saved up. I don't think you'll ever see him play again. I think he's made a valiant effort to come back. He and Joe Flacco are the very best of friends, but the Ravens also have three young tight ends on the roster, Crockett Gilmore, Max Williams, and Nick Doyle. All those guys can play ball. There's no need for Dennis Pitta on his team, and I think for his health, for his life going forward as a human being, it's in his best interest that he's going to retire and all indications are that he will retire sometime this season.
How do you think safety Terrence Brooks is going to do this year?
Terrence Brooks, another guy, he's on the pup list just like Dennis Pitta. You know, he's got a high ceiling, and they're high on him, and hopefully he'll be back, you know, after six games in the season. There's a guy that can give him the depth at safety, at the nickel corner, dime corner. Great instincts. They're very high on him, and hope to see him on the field. He was starting to come on strong last year before he suffered his knee injury, but we're very high on Terrence Brooks.
The next guy I want to look at, you mentioned before about Max Williams. Do you think he'll end up slotting in as the number one tight end for Flacco, or do you see it being somebody else?
You know, Crockett Gilmore is coming on strong. He had a great playoff run last year. He's gained about 15 pounds worth of muscle. He's about 275 right now. Runs real, real well. A very tenacious blocker. Right now, Max Williams is number two on the depth chart. The thing about Max Williams is he's only 21 years old. He's still a very young ball player. I don't see him unseating Crockett Gilmore early on in the season. I think Crockett Gilmore will start a tight end. I think you'll see Max Williams come on in two tight end sets, and I think you'll see him progress through the season and maybe come playoff time if the Ravens are in contention. I think maybe at that point he'll have a shot to unseat Crockett Gilmore, but he's going to have a hard time right from the get-go just because of his age. He's just a very young ball player. The reviews have been good on him so far, but he hasn't done enough to take Crockett Gilmore's position. But there's a player that, you know, maybe halfway through the season, three-quarters of the way through, you'll see him maybe on the field a little bit more reps. But again, it depends on how many two tight end sets that Mark Trestman runs as well. This team, they do have receivers. They have a lot of receivers on the squad, the tight ends, et cetera. There's only going to be so many opportunities for these guys to get. Even Nick Doyle may get some touchdowns late in the season, particularly in the red zone. Another stout blocker. But Max Williams will have to prove his mettle as a blocker, not just as a receiver, in order for him to be able to get on the field.
How do you see the Ravens doing this year coming up?
Hard to say, of course. You know, we're always optimistic this time of the season, but I think they have the pedigree. They've been in the playoffs seven times out of the last eight seasons. They have the offensive and defensive lines to compete, and I think that's what a lot of fans miss the point of when we analyze a team. We tend to look at the quarterback, the receivers, the tight ends, the skill positions, the sexy positions, but the trenches, the offensive line, the big uglies, as Bill Parcells used to say, that's where it's at, and the Ravens have their entire offensive line coming back. They have this entire defensive line coming back, absent Halutinata, but they did draft Carl Davis out of Iowa, another big, nasty 6'4", 330-pound defensive tackle. So based on their track record, based on the lines, you know, I see 10-6, 11-5. They play in a very tough division with the Steelers and the Bengals. It's tough to sweep those teams, and even the Browns can flash and bite you. So I'm thinking 10-6, 11-5, and scratch and claw their way back into the playoffs. That's my assessment of the season early on.
Dennis, thank you for joining us this evening. Where can our listeners find you?
Appreciate the time. It's been fun being on your show as always. We're on 1570 AM WNST every Sunday morning from 9 until noon. You can tune us in on the web at WNST.net and also on the free TuneIn radio app, 1570 AM WNST.
All right, Dennis, thank you.
Thanks again, guys. Great show. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. All right. That was Dennis Colazzo's, host of the Sunday Sports Voice on WNST. In about a minute or so, we will be joined by Steve Lennox, who was a former host on MLB.com, to kind of get his take on the MLB trade deadline, as there's a lot of trades that happened. A couple of them were head-scratchers, like a couple of teams made trades that I didn't understand why they didn't make.
For example?
Like, I didn't understand why San Diego traded for nobody.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. The only team that wasn't part of the trade deadline was the Diamondbacks. Every other team made a move. They were involved in some way, but they didn't get rid of any of their free agents. They held all their to be free agents: Justin Upton, Venable, and Kennedy.
And
I just think what was amazing is that most of these people that got traded, the superstars, got traded for minor leaguers.
Well, doesn't that say something about, like, Papelbon and these guys? They get traded for nobody.
Well, Papelbon was an interesting case because he was getting out of Philly anyways. And right now we are being joined by Steve Lennox, former host on MLB.com. Steve, how you doing this evening?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very good. What's your impression with the Mets right now, a team that's on the rise?
My impression of the Mets is just keep doing what they're doing. You know, I think we've all sort of chronicled the last week or so, and even in the last couple of weeks, of wondering what the front office and ownership was going to do in terms of adding guys. And just to think, I watched them put the lineup on the SNY screen tonight, and just think, just a couple of weeks ago, it was Campbell and Mayberry, both under 200 in the middle of that lineup, and now you've got Conforto, who came up, who you thought was going to, you know, hope at least jumpstart the offense. Now he's down in the number eight spot, and you know the lineup's a lot deeper. The starting pitching has been terrific; it's got to continue to be that. I love the fact that I read earlier tonight and talked to someone today that Mass is now throwing from flat ground, so it seems like he's, you know, on the first steps of coming back, probably in the next, I would say, 3 to 4 weeks, maybe early September. To get him back in the rotation. And you know, these innings are going to come up for some of these young guys, but you certainly want to see him pitching in October. And right now they're looking awfully good. There's going to be a bump in the road here, I'm sure, but you know, it seems like they're all coming together and they're all pulling for each other, which is great to see night in, night out.
Well, can you see this team with who they picked up with Cespedes and Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson and Tyler Clifford? Does this team have enough in it now to make a push for October?
Absolutely. I mean, they're there. They're right there. You know, after tonight, they win tonight and the Nationals lose, and they're in first place by themselves. We're not talking about a virtual tie for first place. We're talking about the team being in first place the first week of August. So I think you're at the point now where, you know, it's the old cliche of, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Well, it does become a sprint at some point. And to a certain degree, I think they sent a message a little bit to the Nationals this weekend in some ways. And I read a lot of the Washington stuff this morning to see the quotes from the players and everything. And you know, I think it was Bryce Harper who said, you know, they haven't seen Strasburg in a while. They haven't seen Scherzer. And that's the case, absolutely. But you know what? They saw the Mets best this weekend. They set it up out of the All-Star break where it was Harvey DeGrom and Syndergaard, and they didn't do a whole heck of a lot. Harper didn't have a lot of good swings. I mean, he's certainly capable of taking over a series, and it just never happened in the series this weekend against the Mets. But, yeah, I mean, I think Mets fans should believe it, because I would think 1 through 25 in that clubhouse right now, they all believe that that they're right there and that they're in this.
As far as Cespedes goes, why is he – this is, I believe, his third team, and he's been in the league for how many years?
This is his fourth team, and Oakland, Boston, Detroit, and now the Mets.
What's been how many years?
You know, he's going to – I think this is his fourth full year, fifth full year. You know, Oakland was gonna move him. I mean, they moved him at the right time because – he's a free agent at the end of this year. He had it in his contract, and I don't believe it affects the Mets anyway. But he had it in his contract that you know, whatever team was that he was with, since he was traded in season as a free agent after this year, the Mets weren't going to be able to tender him for next year anyway. Thus, you know, not really being involved in getting a draft pick for him if he leaves via free agency after this season, but. But Oakland loves their draft picks, and that was in this contract that they wouldn't have been able to tender him either. So, you know, as many moves as they make, it made sense when he moved to Boston and the Red Sox moved him for what they thought was going to be some starting pitching that was going to help him out this year. And that didn't happen, and, you know, the Tigers went into sell mode. So I've never heard, and I've talked to a couple of people about him in the last few weeks, I've never heard him as sort of a negative in the clubhouse. I guess he tries to, from what I understand, he tries to get along with his teammates and everything. He tries to fit in. He is a personality. I don't think he's quite Yasiel Puig, but he is a personality. And you know, he's a guy who can certainly go on stretches. You know, when David Wright went down in April, they never had anyone that could just put the team on their back for a few weeks. You thought maybe Kadir could do it at a stretch in Duda, and they never did. Duda has done it in the last couple of weeks here, message received, I guess. But, you know, with Cespedes, I think it's just a matter of he's a free agent, and the teams that he's been with weren't really inclined to sign him after the 2015 season, and they figured, you know, we'll get something while we can. And, you know, if Detroit was in it, they wouldn't have moved him. But since they felt that, you know what, right now the way we are set up, we're not going to win in 2015, you know, we don't have designs on signing him at the end of the year, we'll get a couple of pieces for them, and that's what they did.
It just bothers me because baseball is no loyalty anymore. It's you could be
no.
a different team every year and just keep going.
Well, I mean, you could argue a little bit to a certain degree that there is loyalty because we saw with Wilmer Flores, well documented over the last handful of days, going back to last Wednesday, and you know, you read stories over the last couple of days that Zach Wheeler called Sandy Alderson saying, you know, I want to be here, I want to be a part of this too. So, you know, those guys are young in their careers and they don't want to be necessarily moved, but they, you know, it gives you an idea that you know the players here understand that there's a lot of good things going on with the Mets. And, you know, they want to be a part of it. So I do understand what you're saying. I do agree with it. You know, baseball is becoming almost like football where every year, you know, guys are moving different teams, different leagues and things like that. But, you know, it's a part of the business where some of these teams got to, you know, right now go for it and, you know, add as many players as you can. I do think like Toronto and San Diego, I mean, the moves that they've made last offseason and here at the trade deadline before Friday, you know, they're playing fantasy league baseball right now. They're just trying to add big pieces and see what fits. And, you know, it hasn't fit for the Padres necessarily this year. We'll see how the Blue Jays fare the rest of the way with the additions that they made.
Well, looking at the whole thing with Wilmer Flores, how did Sandy Alderson go from being the most hated guy in New York and earlier in the week at the end of the week being the most loved guy?
Well, I'll equate it to being a dad. You know, sometimes when you don't give your sons what they want, you're not the best person in the world. And, you know, Alderson and Wilpon, the Wilpons weren't necessarily, you know, making the moves. And all of a sudden there were some nice presents under the tree, you know, and the moves that Sandy Alderson made. And I give him the people in the front office credit because, you know, they waited. And I always feel like it's better to make a trade in early July. I would have loved to have seen a trade, too. I think it would have sent a great message not only, you know, to the guys in the clubhouse, but to the fan base earlier in July that, hey, we believe in this group and we're going to make moves. But they waited to the end, and they probably didn't have to give up the pieces that they thought. I mean, you know, they were going to give up, and I'm glad Wheeler's still with the Mets, and I think he's got a bright future. But they were almost be able to put together a deal for a Carlos Gomez or a Jay Bruce for a pitcher who's not going to pitch until this time next year. That tells you what other teams think about Zach Wheeler and willing to wait. But, you know, the Mets still weren't giving up a Conforto. They weren't giving up some of the guys. You know, they weren't giving up any of the rotation guys, which I've always been for. I've had arguments on Twitter. I've had arguments over the phone with people of, you know, why are you giving up Wheeler for Justin Upton? Why are you giving up Syndergaard in a proposed deal that you have? You know, they gave up some prospects, but you have to. But they didn't give up the top-of-the-line guys, and they didn't empty the farm system to go out and make the moves that they made. They made some good moves, and we'll see if these prospects end up panning out. Well, you know, a lot of them don't.
With the Mets always playing second fiddle to the Yankees, now that they're playing well, do you see them evening up where fans are not afraid to say that Mets fans?
That's a good one. You know what? If they want to jump on board, let them jump on board. You know, whether it's bandwagon fans or fans who have been down for a few years, there's some excitement around this team. You know, the last few nights, I was out there on Wednesday, and I think there was only 25,000 in attendance, but now there was people were into it. They were into the team. They were into the pitching. They were into everything that was going on. And I think the Mets will never take over. You know, if they have a good 4 or 5 year run stretch here, people will absolutely love it. They loved it in the mid '80s. It's been a long time since. You know, but the Yankees are going to be right there, and the Yankees have their fans. And you know, there's plenty of New Yorkers, whether it's Long Island, New York, upstate New York, Connecticut, that can root for both teams.
Well, talking about the Yankees, were you surprised that they didn't make any moves?
A little bit, but I do commend them for the fact. And remember, they can still make some moves here, you know, during the month of August with guys. There'll be plenty of guys who clear waivers and that they could possibly make deals with. You know, there's a couple things that I like about the Yankees. A, they're going to give Severino an opportunity. We'll see what he does middle of the week this week, and he's going in right in there against the Red Sox. So it tells you what they think about him. That, A, they didn't put him in a deal because they think highly of him, and they understand the importance of having young pitchers who are controllable in terms of, you know, of salary and things like that. And they're throwing him in against the Red Sox. So they obviously feel he's got not only the ability to pitch, but the poise to go in there and throw against the Red Sox. It doesn't matter if the Red Sox are in the last place, and, you know, it's just in the three games on the schedule. It's still Yankees-Red Sox. It means something. You know, so I think the Yankees still could make some moves here in August, and it might depend on what they feel they need. The other thing that I like about the Yankees right now is that Gregorius finally seems to be coming into his own. And if you think about the Yankees in years past where they've had guys, I mean, this guy's replacing Derek Jeter, you know, and there's, you know, Robertson came in and replaced Mariano Rivera and did well. This guy's replacing Derek Jeter. And if there was a guy in the 80s or 90s or maybe even the 70s replacing a big-time Yankee and they failed early on, they would have never – Gregorius would have never seen July 1 or August 1 with George Steinbrenner at the helm. This front office, the Suns, Hal and Hank, they have a different way of doing things, and Gregorius is the shortstop. He's going to go out there every single day, and it didn't look good early on, defensively or offensively. But now he seems to be coming into his own, and he's turning into the player that the Yankees thought they were getting when they got him from Arizona. So I like the Yankees in the sense that they're still got a nice lead in the division. But, boy, that starting pitching, it needs to be held together. And they need guys to go out there and give them innings. I didn't like with the Yankees when I heard Kimbrel and Aroldis Chapman. I thought they could address needs. If they were going to make a move, they could have addressed other needs because that was just shoring up what is a real strength with Betances and Miller at the end of the game, eighth and ninth inning. You know, to add another reliever when you could maybe have gone out and gotten a starter of some level, that would have been the move that I would have made. But I have no problem with them staying put because they still can make some moves here in August.
Let's leave New York for a second. What about two questions? The Larry Lucchino thing in Boston and C.J. Wilson's injury.
What was the second one?
C.J. Wilson.
With the Angels.
Yeah.
That'll be an interesting one because that does dig into them a little bit. You know, and Trout, I forgot to look his numbers up today, but I know he's been back in the lineup, but he missed a couple of days last week. And Trout's got a little bit of a wrist issue. Those don't necessarily go away right away. For a hitter, the hands and the wrists are just so important. Wilson, when a pitcher goes down like that, it's somebody else's opportunity. And the Angels are built where they've been able to plug some holes in. So it's somebody's opportunity. And there's another team that can go out and maybe – add a pitcher if they need to, but you know maybe they look from within right now and they can do it with a schedule of you know possibly shorten the rotation to go with four guys for a couple of weeks and then see where they're at. But you know they added a couple of outfielders and I think that was part of the reason that they added three different outfielders last week was because there might be some uncertainty there with Trout. I would be more worried about Trout than Wilson because I think they can. Fill his void from within. Lucchino, interesting one. I think that could be possibly the first of a handful of moves with the Red Sox. It sounds like they will. It sounds like they're going to wait until the end of the season to make more moves. It does, at least from what I read this weekend, it sounds like they want to keep him on in some capacity. He's involved with their AAA team up in Rhode Island where they're trying to get he's part of the ownership group, which was some minority stakeholders in the Red Sox, now own that Triple A team, and they're trying to get a new stadium in Hartford to leave McCoy Stadium in Pawtucket. And I know he's a big part of that, and that would probably continue. The interesting thing is with Ben Cherington, I know there are some people up there who wonder if he's on a very short leash right now. I don't think he is. I think he'll be fine. But the man that they're apparently replacing Lucchino with is not necessarily a baseball guy. He's more involved, and he's got a great track record. Apparently he went to school, and the name is escaping me, Sam Kennedy. I was reading up on him this weekend. He actually went to high school with Theo Epstein. But he's more on the business side. He's the guy who's helped bring other events, concerts and the hockey as well, the Winter Classics that the NHL has had, that bring the Fenway. He's been involved in a lot of other things away from the team on the business side with the Red Sox group that they put together a few years ago, Fenway Sports Properties, I believe it is. And so Kennedy's coming in and likely replacing Lucchino, but it's more on the business side of what the Red Sox are doing. It'd be interesting to see if they replace Lucchino on the baseball side and add a vice president, someone above Ben Cherington, who maybe, you know, has a lot of say in the baseball moves. You look at the Dodgers, you look at the Cubs. They've got all-star talent in their front offices. Maybe the Red Sox try to go that route to help Cherington with some different things, almost a senior advisor level to some degree. And one name that I would think about is Dave Dombrowski, because his contract with the Tigers is up at the end of the year. That could be an interesting one for the Red Sox. And remember, the Blue Jays and the Angels are two other teams that are going to be looking for executives in the front office at that level probably after the season is over.
Which team do you think came out the best with the trades, and which team came out the worst?
You know, that one's driving me crazy a little bit. I know we all want to, you know, right now I would say Kansas City and Toronto. Now, the Royals bettered themselves with a pitcher and a hitter in Ben Zobrist who can play in multiple positions. And the Blue Jays went out there and got a great pitcher in David Price, who can walk at the end of the year and leave via free agency. And they got Troy Tulowitzki. They got rid of Jose Reyes. Now, Tulowitzki, I was never big on him going to the Mets. And I really wonder about him on the turf. And I think that's slowed Jose Reyes up over the last couple of years. I like what they both did. But ultimately what happens, you know, some of these teams are gone for broke. The Royals, to a certain degree, getting Cueto, leaving for, you know, they're not going to be able to afford him at the end of the year, I don't think. And their window is open, but they made it to the World Series last year, but Dayton Moore understands we're going to lose some of our guys over the next couple of years in free agency, some guys that are going to be priced out of what we can afford. The Blue Jays have to win now. And the only way, I mean, I do think they can get back into the division with the Yankees and even the Orioles, but time will tell. But the NFL draft, the NBA draft, who won? Well, we don't know who won yet. You know, whoever got the best of this is going to go make a real deep run into October, and we'll see if the World Series winner possibly went out. Was one of the teams that made a lot of moves at the trade deadline. Two moves that are, to me, great moves: Kazmir to the Astros and Leak to the Giants. I'm curious to see how those moves work out for those two teams. I think Kazmir's already worked out well for the Astros, and I think Leak is a nice pickup by the Giants.
Two teams I just like to talk about quickly. What's going on with the Tigers this year, and what's going on with the Angels?
Well, it's interesting because the Angels, we'll start with them. The Angels, I think, are going to be right there at the end. I mean, you've got Trout and Pujols both putting up, I won't say career numbers, but, I mean, they're on par with what they've done. And Trout early on in his career and what Pujols did early on in his career with the Cardinals before coming to the Angels. I think the Angels will be okay. They've fallen off a little bit. within the division. The Astros have gotten hot here again. But I think the Angels are a team that certainly can be right there. Now, I mean, they're there within the wild card, I believe. But maybe they're one of the teams that looks at the division a little bit more. The Tigers, they've had some injuries. You know, Verlander, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Verlander because you read last week that, well, you know, the Tigers believe that they could possibly even re-sign David Price after the season is over. If they go trade him, get a couple of pieces, they could be in the mix if they wanted to be after the season to go out and sign him as a free agent. He's going to be 30 at the end of this month. And I don't know that he's necessarily going to get the huge contract. He almost reminds me a little bit of CC Sabathia. He's got a ton of innings. He's going to pitch meaningful games here in the next 2 months with the Blue Jays. He might get into the playoffs this year. He hasn't had great success necessarily with the postseason, with the Rays, and even last year. With a start, actually last year I think he made a decent start, but still ended up with a loss. But you know, he reminds me of Sabathia a little bit, where when Sabathia went to Milwaukee, he's almost a hired gun, and that team knows I'm running him out there every fifth day, and I'm going to pitch him and pitch him and pitch him. This is the time that I'm going to pitch him. So when the Tigers I think did a nice job getting rid of him and getting some pieces for him. I mean, they got Norris, who was a top prospect. The Blue Jays were willing to give him up, and the Tigers didn't necessarily believe that Severino of the Yankees was as good a prospect as Norris was for coming from Toronto going to Detroit. But, you know, the Tigers, they've made moves. They've depleted their farm system to a certain degree, making those moves over the last few years. They've had some guys come up and fare all right. But remember, you've got a big bat out of that lineup right now with Miguel Cabrera, and there's no telling, and I don't know that necessarily if there's a time frame as to when he's going to return. But Verlander, with the money that they have tied up in him and Cabrera, that's a lot of money for years to come, and I don't know their farm system well enough. I think they're always going to be a team that has to go out there and rely on adding some free agents. And another team that sort of has gotten old real quick. You know, think about the Phillies a few years ago. And the Tigers have just gotten old. A lot of wear and tear on a lot of their players.
Do you see Reyes staying with Colorado? When he got traded, there were a lot of rumors. They figured he'd get traded and then get traded again.
And he's probably one of those guys who will clear through waivers here in the month of August, because I think he's got, almost $50 million due over the next two seasons. And he's slowed down considerably. I could easily see him being moved here this month, where the Rockies, there's three ways, and I had to review this again today, you know, on revocable waivers, you pull him back if he's claimed. They could try to make a deal with a team who's put a claim in on him, or if he clears through waivers, and if that team puts a claim in, they could actually just let him go. The Yankees, I think, did that with maybe Cecil Fielder and Jose Canseco back in the 90s, 2000s. Both of them ended up with the Yankees that way, or at least one of them maybe. I apologize if I'm mistaken there, but one of those guys ended up where the team just said, you know what, you want him? Take him, the money's yours. So the Rockies could even do that. If somebody puts a claim in on him, he can basically be given to that team, and the money belongs to them at that point in time. So I could easily see him as a guy who just clears through waivers, and then here in the month of August he could possibly be moved, and he's got a lot of money left on his deal. And I don't see him staying in Colorado, but I've gone back and forth as to whether or not I'd like to see him at the top of the Met lineup. And the way things are right now, no thank you. I want that flexibility. I don't want that money on the books. And I'd want the flexibility to add payroll, during this offseason or next year to fill in a piece or two. And I didn't think the Mets necessarily did the right thing when they let him go via free agency. I thought they should have traded him and gotten at least something back if they knew they weren't going to sign him all those years ago when he went to Miami. But I still miss Jose Reyes sometimes in a Met uniform.
Do Do you see any? Were you surprised at certain trades that were not made? Was there anything you were looking for that never happened?
I think a lot of people, it seemed like the Padres were just ready to make some moves, and deal away. I was a little surprised, and I'm still trying to. I got to take a look at it. But the three team deal with the Marlins, Braves, and the Dodgers. The Braves gave up a pretty good infield prospect in that deal, and I gotta look at that deal a little bit more. I thought maybe the Padres would trade. It just seemed like they were gonna make some moves. I thought as well the Reds could have been more active. Cueto did go, but it seemed like Bruce was on the block, and they were also at least willing to listen on Chapman. But it seemed like the price tag was awfully high, and I think they're a handful of pieces away. I mean, they moved the two starting pitchers, but it just doesn't seem like that's ever going to work in Cincinnati. They've got to make some moves that, whether it's through their minor league system and bring up some young chips out of their system or make some wise moves in the trade market. It just doesn't seem like, that lineup is going to be conducive and their pitching is going to be conducive to winning in the next couple of years.
Steve, before we wrap up, what are your final thoughts on baseball in general?
Baseball with Rob Manfred, I think there's a little transition going on here. And I think it could benefit baseball tremendously. Now, a lot of people talk about kids aren't playing baseball right now, so they're not watching games. And I deal with it. I have a 6 and 8-year-old who would rather be out hanging out with mom right now reading or playing Monopoly rather than watching the game on TV. We go to a handful of games a year, whether it's minor league or major league games, because thankfully we have the ability to do that. But Rob Manfred seems to be very aggressive and understands and has an understanding of growing this game. Now, some people will write that baseball is in dire straits. I don't think that's true, and I don't think that's true at all, because baseball has continuously, in under Spud Selig and under Rob Manfred, has continued to make money for the teams, and therefore players' salaries have gone up. And I think baseball is in a pretty good situation. The money, they continue to make money. People are taking things in differently. We're not just sitting in front of the TV or going to the game every single night anymore. We're taking our information in differently. I think MLB Advanced Media, who I worked for at one point, that company continues to grow for baseball, and their understanding of technology and different things is going to really help them in the next couple of years, in the next 5 years, in the next decade to showcase the game differently. And this, I read it, every year prospects come up and do well, and, guys are added to major league teams. There are a lot of young guys right now, and these guys have to continuously be promoted. You have to promote the individual. Baseball can do that, similar to basketball. Football doesn't have that capability sometimes because you don't see these guys, you can see through the mask with the cameras nowadays, but baseball, I think there's some real growth here, and I think we're going to see it under the new commissioner who learned under Bud Selig and who has a real business sense, and I think he's going to be very good for the game, and I do believe he's got the ability because he's negotiated with the Players Association. I think that relationship between owners, the commissioner, and the players and the Players Association, that has the ability and potential to continue to grow, and if it does, it grows the game.
Steve, thanks very much for coming on tonight. Where can our listeners find you?
Where can they find me? I'm on Twitter at Steve Lennox, and right now doing some national work with ESPN on the radio side, and continuing to grow that. So. And I love being on with you guys. So whenever you want, I always I've enjoyed it. I think it was, our second time hooking up. I enjoy talking with you guys. And those are the places. Everyone's on social media these days, as you guys know.
Steve, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys. I enjoyed it.
Have a good night.
All right. That was Steve Lennox. We have one story I want to get to quickly before we wrap it up for the season. Utah high school football coach suspended his entire team. Not just one player, but suspended the entire team.
Was there a movie like that?
What was it called?
Get Carter, wasn't it? The basketball team?
Coach Carter.
That was a great movie. Did he suspend the whole team for something or
Here's what happened. Some of the players on the team were cyberbullying. Instead of practice this week for last Friday's game, the players had to perform community service.
Let me guess. The coach got fired.
No.
Oh.
He's getting praised for it because he did something that no coach, professional, collegiate, or on the high school level will ever do.
The miracle didn't praise him. You always get somebody's going to praise him for something.
Yeah. It was – this is definitely an interesting show.
I'm just surprised that somebody didn't say something stupid about it.
You know somebody's going to.
I think it's great. Cyberbullying is a horrible thing. And it's nice that he took a stand. And truthfully, I find it hard to believe that all 80 players were involved in it. But
yeah.
It's like, you know, someone's teaching in a classroom. If one person does something wrong,
yep.
Everybody gets penalized.
Yeah,
same thing in the military.
It's ridiculous, but it's the way it is. And truthfully, the guy should get a medal.
But the reason, it was other reasons too, but the only in the article I just got, the only thing they mentioned was the cyberbullying thing. The only way they can be reinstated back on the team is by performing community service.
Good. I think she'll get her cell phone taken away. And tell them to get on Facebook.
Currently,
the Mets are
up against Miami Marlins 3-0. They're in the top of the fifth inning right now. And the Yankees are off tonight. They start a 3-game set tomorrow night against the Boston Red Sox in the Bronx. So definitely have that. Tomorrow night, Boston Red Sox player makes his debut, Major League Baseball debut. Wednesday night, like Steve Lennox mentioned before, Luis Severino makes his much-anticipated debut.
Let me ask you a question about the Yankees and Red Sox. Were the Yankees in first, were they 6 games up?
Yeah.
6-0?
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox in last. How many games out are they now?
A lot.
Like 100?
Yeah.
It was like 19 and a half or something.
Do you see the Red Sox and Yankees series still holding the same way as it did when they were fighting in first place?
Yeah, because it's still Yankees-Boston.
Why is that, Peter?
Because it's still Yankees-Boston.
Yeah. So what? But it's first place Yankees against last place Boston.
Doesn't
you think really. It makes a difference?
Yes. No, it doesn't. I'm sorry.
Why do you not think it makes a difference?
I mean, I still think it makes a difference.
Peter?
What?
Why do you not think it makes a difference?
Because it's still Yankees-Red Sox, and it's the best rivalry in baseball going. And no matter what, the Yankees are probably going to win the division. The Red Sox are going to stay where they are.
Yeah. But I agree with what – no. We have to wrap up the show now.
How much time do
we have left? Less than a minute.
Oh.
No, we actually have a minute.
Any final thoughts before we
– Final thoughts, like Billy Joel says.
I'll get to that.
He's performing at the National Coliseum this week.
Tomorrow night's the
last. The last concert at National Coliseum.
Yeah.
And then I heard they're giving him the Coliseum. He gets taken home.
No, they're going to...
He's going to move in.
I also heard that a lot of the radio stations in New York are actually give away tickets still.
They sold out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, of course.
So who's got tickets?
I have no idea. Any?
I don't.
Any final thoughts? I hope that these trades that the people did actually they do well. Most of them are probably going to be a bust, like always. But I hope they do well. And I can't wait to see the second half of baseball.
Yeah, and like we mentioned before, right now, Mets are up 3-0, top of the fifth, man on first, Daniel Murphy's up at the plate. My final thoughts, this was an interesting show. Tune in this week to all the fine programming right here on Frat House Sports Network. It includes Cleanup Hitters, which airs tomorrow night, the Frat House Show, which airs Thursday, Recap Show Saturday, and the NASCAR Show Sunday. Tune in next week to another Stitches.
We'll be back here next Monday. Thank you.